This is News Tech, Episode 4, for the month of August 2008. Leo and the TriCaster. Episode 4 of News Tech. I'm Rich Lawrence. Thanks for joining us. Bill Panagoulias is going to join us in just a few moments. Also joining us is a very special guest. You may know this guest from Tech TV, from such shows as The Screensavers, as well as Call for Help. You may also know him from his podcast, award-winning podcast, I should say, such as This Week in Tech and Mac Break Weekly. And you can find those at twit.tv. And we're going to talk right now to Mr. Leo Laporte. Leo, thanks for being on News Tech. We really do appreciate it. We know you're a busy guy, obviously. You got so much stuff
going. Yeah, that's why I was an hour late, Rich. I'm so sorry. Oh, man.
No, don't. I apologize. No, don't worry about it. We totally understand. I've done the same thing many a time. And so. But, all right, well, I mean, recently I was going across the Twit website, and I saw that you were getting into video, and you had mentioned right on the website that you had gotten a TriCaster from New Tech.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously you got to love the TriCaster, right?
It's amazing.
Isn't
it's
it?
Truly amazing.
It's fantastic.
I've been seeing Kiki do demos since I don't know years, for 10, 20 years of the toaster, and I've always wanted one. And I've been aware of the TriCaster since it came out, but I really had no excuse to buy one. And until I started doing this live stream, and then it was really, well, how am I going to switch this, cuz I want to use multiple cameras. Mm-hmm. Cuz I'm not paying camera operators, so they're all locked down. So I thought, well, the way I'll get around that is having a lot of cameras. And how am I going to switch them? How am I going to switch five cameras? How am I going to be able to get screenshots? How am I going to be able to do lower thirds, all that stuff? And when I saw the toaster, it just flipped. I mean, the TriCaster. I had, I was really aware of the toaster more as a green screen, effects and that kind of thing, virtual studio stuff, and the TriCaster's virtual studio stuff. So, but I don't use any of that stuff. I just use it as a great switcher, and it's fantastic.
I was watching a stream last night while I was at work, and which is a no-no. So if my program director's listening, please turn it off now. And it's just the way, because you had the live controller there in front of you, and
yeah,
it was just so very easy for it. It looks so simple. I mean, you're talking, and you just hit a button, and then all of a sudden, whoosh, and it looked very effortless.
Yeah, actually, the live controllers made it a little bit more obvious what I'm doing. Before, I just used the keyboard. It's I have a desk where I have three keyboard trays, one to my left, one in front of me, and one to the right of me. I'm kind of in a U shape, and I do all the broadcasting from the desk with the cameras kind of surrounding me. And I put the keyboard to the TriCaster, the regular PC keyboard and mouse, to my right, and I actually got really good. Even though I'm a lefty, I got really good at, without looking at it, just doing all the switching, fading in CGs and fading them out, doing crossfades, all that stuff, just with my right hand. And that's you can't even tell I'm doing it because I don't look down. My hand's just kind of sitting there. And so that really is kind of spooky. But then they sent me the live control. I'm beta testing the live control. And I just love I love having a T-bar. So it's, it's a little more obvious what I'm doing. In fact, much more obvious, because Bill sent me a bunch of these great discrete effects, and I've been throwing them in, because with the live control, you can, with one button, you can go from a standard crossfade to an effect, and then you have a dial below the effect that you can dial through the effects. So it's really easy, to be, and I usually generally use, I either do switches or fades, but it's really easy to throw in a transition. And I've been doing that a little too much, I'm afraid. In fact, I've started playing with the transitions. There's one of a giant, I guess it's a B-29 in the military package. It's what are those? The
military
flying fortresses.
Effect. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And it's really great because it comes swooping over you. So I with a T-bar, see, you can totally control it and its speed and how it's going, and you can pause it. And so I'm slowly. It's really bad. I'm playing with a thing. They got the airplane coming up, and then I'll stop it and make it go backwards. And oh, it's terrible. My people are yelling at me, but they could tell I'm a kid in a candy shop. It's
really
funny.
I was just going to say that. It's like a kid with a new toy.
It's exactly. That's exactly it. Oh, it's so much fun.
Oh yeah. What are some of the other features that you really like about the TriCaster? What was it?
Well, I'm using one right now. You know, one of the issues we had was I'm doing about 40 hours of live video a week. Most of it is me recording the podcast, the audio shows that we've been doing on the Twit Network all along. I mean, we do about 12 shows a week, so there's quite a bit of content. But that, you know, that's only about half of it, and then the rest of it is me interviewing people or sitting around talking or interacting with the chat room, taking calls, that kind of stuff. I just, you know, kind of stay on for eight hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week. And the problem is, okay, well, that's, there you go, there's 40 hours, but what about the other time, you know, the rest of the week? Mm-hmm. And we were going dark, and there's these dual tape machines, they call them DDRs, that allow me to play back pre-recorded stuff. So I record everything. And by the way, the new TriCaster Studio, the 2.0, records in very high quality MPEG-2. It's really good. So I record everything. And then I can stack it. It's going on right now. I stack up a bunch of shows, you know, kind of a best of, and I press play and I walk away. I have to say that the TriCaster sometimes can be a little flaky when playing back a lot of video. So occasionally it'll stop in the middle or whatever, but hey, it's better than nothing. It's been running since yesterday afternoon. I have probably an 8-hour loop that I'm going back through of about 10 different shows, and it's running flawlessly. I put up a little pre-recorded CG up at the top, and it does a great job. So that's a feature I'm using more and more. I love the CGs. That's really important to us. We have different CGs for each show. It makes it easier to see what show we're doing. I haven't even read the manual yet. I probably should read the manual. I'm sure there's other cool stuff I can do.
Oh, there's.
I haven't, like I said, I haven't gone anywhere near the virtual studios or anything like that. I have a real studio, so I kind of like to play off that and not so much do the green screen stuff.
Do you think you'd be doing some green screen stuff later on? I mean,
I might. I haven't. There's a, in a kind of subtle way, I have a window behind me, and we've been looking at ways of greening that. And if I can get it to green, then I might start using green screen effects as a way of flying stuff through. You know, maybe just have a blue sky behind me sometimes, but occasionally maybe have an airplane go by that has a sponsor's name in it or something like that. Just to play with it subtly. I don't really want to do a virtual studio because so many people do virtual studios now. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the idea that we have actually a real place that really looks nice and works well. But maybe I'll have to because people are getting kind of bored of the man at the desk motif. Well, so maybe I'll have to do something.
I found a ton of stuff. I mean, in the background there, when I was watching the stream last night at work.
There's a lot of stuff there, huh?
Yeah. I saw like a Guitar Hero guitar. Yeah. I saw one laptop for a child. I saw, what else did I see?
There's an Emmy back there if you look hard. There's an
Emmy? I didn't see that.
Yeah, well, I kind of place it there strategically just so people don't say, who is this Potzer? What is he doing? No, I'm a trained professional.
That's right. You should get that picture of you and Kelly and Regis. And
there you go. I should. That would be very funny. That's a great idea.
Yeah,
maybe I'll do that.
Throw that in there as well. You know what else you could throw in there? I don't know if you remember, but back when you were doing Call for Help, you had a bunch of the people on your forums there at leoville.com. Photoshop you on your new John Deere tractor.
Yes, I do remember that.
I actually did one, and I submitted it to you, and you actually put mine up on the air. It was Voltron with you at the feet of Voltron driving your tractor.
I love it. I remember that one very well, Rich. Very good.
I've still got it too. So if you want it, I'll email it back to you. But
I would love it. Because I don't think that's the problem. I don't think I've saved any of that stuff.
I'm a pack rat. I save all that kind of stuff.
Oh, thank goodness you do.
So, I'll send that to you. So now, all right. So I mean, we've talked about what you do like. Let's turn the tables. Obviously, you can't have good without bad. What's some of the stuff that you really think is kind of weak, or what you would like to see improved?
I tell you, one thing I get with a TriCaster is that there is a genius behind it, you know, that there's somebody who is absolutely brilliant behind it. And when you first start using it, some of the stuff is kind of non-obvious. It's like, or the user interface, I'm not sure I would have done it that way, but it takes a little while to kind of get it. I have to say now that I've been using it, and I've only been using it about maybe 3 or 4 months. It really is in my fingers. Like I said, it's just kind of comes naturally, but it takes a few clicks of the mouse to do a few things. You know, I'm using it in an unusual way. If you were using it in a normal way where you had a director separate from the talent, this would all be fine. But as talent, it's a little hard for me, for instance, to enter CGs in. You know, I would make it, there's like, you pull up a CG template and you type something, you want to have tab go to the next thing and it doesn't. It's little things like that. They're just quirky. They're little things that, you know, probably the individual behind it got it and I get it now, but initially it kind of throws you. I wish it were a little easier to enter CGs, but then again, I'm trying to do it live on the air, so that's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Well, wait.
The biggest thing is that it's a PC, and so we've had a couple of issues. You know, the first one we got was dead on arrival. NewTek was very good about replacing it immediately, and then the second one we got worked great for about 2 months, and the hard drive just died. I mean, literally just dead.
Ouch.
And it took, but fortunately they shipped us out a new hard drive very quickly, a couple of days. But we were off the air for 2 days. So that's another lesson I've learned. I kind of knew I should have done this all along, and I just was putting it off. I made a clone of the hard drive they sent us. So I have in my desk drawer right here an exact duplicate of the drive we're running off of. If it dies the next time, it's fairly easy to pop it open. I've also added some stuff. And so having it be a PC, I guess the first thing is having it be a PC means it's heir to all the ills a PC is heir to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's sometimes some strange startup behavior. I have now, for some reason, and this is again my fault, I added a second network card. We use a TriCaster straight to a streaming server. So the new TriCaster 2 has a built-in flash media encoder. So we're doing the video, I sent it streaming it out via flash media encoder to a real-time server, an RTMP server. So it broadcasts out. That gives us the best quality. But that is a dedicated T1. I have a T1 just for that, so that nobody else will be using the bandwidth. It'll have all the bandwidth it needs. And then I still want to use the IVGA capability. That's the capability to see computer screens, because we do that a lot. And so I have to have another network, a gigabit network. So I added a network interface card. And now every once in a while when I start it up, it won't start off unless I disconnect the Ethernet for some reason from that card. That's not TriCaster. That's Windows. Right. I mean, I know that's Windows. And I'll figure it out at some point. It's little things like that. Yeah. I do love the IVGA, the idea of, I mean, believe me, that was one of the things we always struggled with on the screensaver and the call for help is how do you show computer screens? Mm-hmm. And IVGA does a very good job of picking up those computer screens with a couple of exceptions. On the PC, you have three levels of zoom, which is really kind of inadequate, but it's better than nothing. I can zoom in on something. It follows the mouse, which means if I move the mouse around, it kind of jumps around a lot. It's okay. It works. In fact, we use the IVGA to bring Skype calls up. When I have Skype mm-hmm. video calls, I'll bring it up full screen. Although I made the computer 800 by 600 because it's a little more responsive. I think IVGA is going over gigabit Ethernet, but still, you know, sometimes the frame rate's kind of slow. So to get it so it's decent frame rate, I make it an 800 by 600 screen. That works pretty well. On the Mac, I have a feeling their IVGA client on the Mac is not as well written or as up to date. It's much slower. And on the Mac has this great kind of infinite zoom feature. You press the control key and scroll the mouse wheel and can zoom into anything. And it's perfect for what I want to do. And IVGA works with it, except that there are some update issues. It doesn't update quite, as fast. There's some, so I have to, you know, it just needs to be, it needs to be a little bit more updated. On the other hand, I mean, it's such a thing, great thing to be able to do it. I literally have three computers to my left running IVGA, and I will switch in the TriCaster, depending on what I need, from I have a Vista computer on a laptop mm-hmm. for Skype. I have a Vista computer on a desktop running my editing software, and I have a Mac, and I will switch between the three frequently during shows. And that capability is really great. It's a little clunky. They need to, they probably need to update that. Other than that, you know, I mentioned the DDR, the tape playback will crash on me occasionally. Mm-hmm. And that's considering how much I'm using it. That's probably, not too surprising.
It did last night. It crashed. It locked up last night because it was about, 9 o'clock Eastern time or so. And then you stopped and I was like, what happened? Oh.
Is it really? It's not going right now because it looks like it's going.
No,
right
it was
now.
Going. It going, but it picked up because I was watching in the studio, so I had the utility computer that I was watching it on in queue, And I'm listening to the audio while I'm doing my shows, and you know, when I pot up the mic to talk on the air.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, oh my God.
It's, you know, it goes off. And so and I'm listening there, and I'm just, you know, and I'm editing a phone call to get ready to go on to the air, and then all of a sudden you stop, and I stop editing. I look up and I'm like, what happened? And I check the utility.
You froze.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, well, you know, it must be something with the stream. So I refresh it a couple times. It's still doing it. No problem. So I go back to doing what I'm doing. I'm doing my show. And then about, about 9:45 or so, next thing I know, I'm sitting there. I'm doing some blogging for music, and your voice just shoots back on. I jump out of my chair.
Oh, wow. See, that's not the TriCast. I don't think that's the TriCast.
No.
That's the problem. I mean, there's a lot of different things in the chain. The TriCaster always gets the blame.
Yeah.
And I feel really bad because it really, there are so many different little things in the chain. You know, I've got a chat room. Has to stay open for StickM, which is the company that feeds the flash. If that chat room shuts down or StickM changes servers, it goes down. If something goes wrong with the T1, it goes down. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that could go wrong. If your browser, you know, freezes up, it goes down. So, but right now, the TriCaster is at least feeding it out. It looks like my website might be down. I don't know what's going on there. But the TriCaster is feeding out the video, so the DDR hasn't crashed on me. It's doing a really good job. Well, and I'm doing two different videos at once because the pre-recorded CG is actually not a CG, but a video with an alpha channel that's playing. So I guess I am using virtual sets because it's playing in the background. And in fact, you can kind of tell if you look at it because it has a little rotating gear in it. Mm-hmm. So I'm really actually playing two videos at the same time. So that's a little bit, probably a little challenging too. Yeah. It's really kind of amazing what this thing can do. I also upgraded it, and this is an upgrade I would recommend to anybody who's using the studio, to add a little ESATA port on the back. So the TriCaster uses SATA drives. They're really great fast drives. It also has, it only uses one drive, so it has free SATA ports internally. Mm-hmm. And for $10, you can buy a little card that connects to the SATA port on the motherboard and puts an SATA connector on the back. And so what we're doing in order to save all the shows we do is I have an external SATA drive. It's actually, it's kind of a neat one. It's looks like a toaster, not a video toaster, like a toast toaster. And you can pop hard drives, bare hard drives into it. Ooh. So what I do, hard drives are cheap now, about $100 a week. I buy a 750 gig hard drive. At the end of the day on Sunday, I pop the old one out, write the date on it, put it up on the shelf, pop a new one in, and record everything to that. Because it's ESATA, it's fast enough to record to. So I'm recording directly to the hard drive, to an external hard drive, but it's a removable one. It's very easy to pop out the drive and put in a new one. So every week I put in a new drive. The idea being that for $100 a week now, I'll save everything I do. And that's really great. And as I said, the new recording format for the TriCaster, the MPEG-2, is really high quality. It's about 10 gigabytes an hour. So it's really high quality.
I'm sold. Yeah. I'm so sold.
I'm not trying to sell you on it, but I couldn't be doing what I'm doing without the TriCaster. They've really done a nice job on that.
It is. It's such an amazing piece of hardware. And Newtek has always had that kind of, in my opinion, always had that foresight vision of where things are going to go. You saw with the video toaster and now with the TriCaster, it's just one of those.
Well, it's funny because I remember, I don't know if you remember a guy named I've forgotten his name, Alex Bennett. He was a San Francisco DJ. He was on K-Rock in LA and he was a San Francisco DJ. And this must have been 10 years ago. He was doing exactly what I'm doing right now.
Really?
He was way ahead of his time. He was streaming his show live from his kitchen using a toaster and switching it. I remember his hand on the toaster keyboard, switching the thing, putting effects up. This was 10 years ago. I don't think anybody could even watch it. You know, I mean, it was, it was way ahead of the time, but you're absolutely right. Because they were kind of had that vision. He could do that. Now I think we're catching up. I think, in fact, this is really the wave of the future. I'm surprised more TV channels and more broadcasters aren't using this.
I'm kind of surprised too. I mean, I know there's still some video toasters out there for like the smaller like community access stations and that kind of thing. I'm surprised.
It's fine for that. Yeah. You know, I think this is really an internet broadcaster's dream come true. Now, a lot of them don't have the $10,000. Mm-hmm. It, you know, I mean, this is a fairly expensive device. It's see, because I come from a mainstream media background, it blows me away how cheap it is. But I think a lot of people, you know, doing it in their kitchen are going to say, oh, you know, huh? That's a little more than I can afford.
Yeah. I mean, when I started in broadcasting, it was back in the early 90s. I mean, they were using Chirons and, you know, it was all analog video still and the switchers and all that in college. And these things are just so darn amazing with so much you can do with it. And you're right. They are. It is cheap. I mean, I would ask my video professor, How much does this cost? How much is this Chiron? And I blow my mind. I'm like, I'd never be able to do something like that.
We had a Tech TV. We built two studios, duplicate studios for broadcasting. We had an A and a B. Each one was $1 million worth of hardware.
Wow.
In the studio. I'm doing the same exact thing. I spent a total of $40,000 on lights, on cameras. I bought those LED lights from Light Panels, so they're very cool, low power. I bought, I have five Canon XL2s. They're not HD because we're streaming Flash. We don't need HD.
Right.
And I bought the TriCaster and extra studio stuff. It was $30,000 or $40,000. And I'm doing everything that they could do with that $1 million studio. There's nothing they could do that I can't do with it. It's pretty remarkable, I have to say. And we took it on the road. I mean, it's also very portable. We took it to New Media Expo. It was an experiment to see, well, can we do this? We rented a van, and Colleen and Tony from my office drove the TriCaster and all the cameras and the lights down. And we set up in Vegas. Took us about 2 hours to set up. Mm-hmm. And we were able to broadcast 2 days live, about 8 hours each day, from the New Media Expo. And I think that's a template for something we're going to do a lot more of.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, and you know, they say it's the TriCaster's a video truck in a box, and it kind of is. You know, I think about we did the same thing for Tech TV. We did CES and Comdex. Cost $1 million. We brought 40 producers down, and
oh wow,
you know, and literally rented a sat truck, and had to get an uplink and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was hugely expensive, and I'm doing all the same stuff over a DSL line using a TriCaster. And I have to say, I mean, admittedly, it's not as slickly produced,
right?
But the content's all there. I mean, and my audience is more interested in content than, blow-dried anchors. So.
Yeah, I mean, I've only done most of my background in broadcasting is radio, but even I can see it's still well done. The content is great. It looks very professional to me. I mean, I don't know how well opinion matters.
No, thank you. That's great.
No, but it does. I mean, and just not to sound fanboyish, I've followed your career and I've listened to your shows. I enjoy listening to you. You're a great host.
Thank you.
I compare you to a lot of the other people I listen to and I watch. And I got to say, you make it look real easy because I'm like pulling my hair out three quarters of the time with what I do at my production studios here. So
I've been doing this so long, Rick. It's almost second nature to me, you know.
Well, that's understandable.
And I think that's what's kind of interesting about this. I think sometimes people probably say, oh, poor Leo. He lost his TV show, and now he has to do this out of his little garage.
Yeah, right.
Isn't that sad?
Right.
But, you know, it's really interesting because I actually have a larger audience than I had in Canada watching me on the internet. And I think at times our audience is actually bigger than it was on Tech TV. You know, when I did the 24 hours of iPhone, we did a 24-hour show covering the iPhone launch. And we got up to 10,000 viewers. Most of the time it was 5,000 and 6,000 viewers, and we got up to 10,000 viewers. And that is, you know, comparable to a small cable channel. So I feel like we're on the cusp of, this is brand new. I think I expect we'll have 10,000 viewers regularly by next year. There's nothing to feel sorry about. This is amazing. This is a revolution. And I think it comes down to the key is, I can serve a very niche audience of people who, these people who watch my stuff are very interested in technology and nothing but. So I could serve that audience at a relatively low cost. I mean, and give them something that they're willing to watch, you know, all day, every day. And by the way, advertisers are just champ. We haven't sold any ads yet on the live stuff, but they're just dying to get on here because it's a huge audience. And we do several million, I think it's 3.6 million people last month. That's a lot of people.
Well, I think it's also partially because of you, Leo. I mean, in tech circles, I mean, you're a pretty well known name. I mean, with books and you know, just being on Tech TV. I mean, that even when it was ZDTV, that was a pretty novel idea, a channel devoted entirely to technology. Yeah. and the digital lifestyle. And I mean, you were on the forefront of all that. So,
well, that's what I've discovered is that, I mean, first of all, I've been very lucky and I'm certainly coasting on tech TV, but what I've discovered is that the, you know, always the pressure at tech TV, which is too bad, and pressure in most mainstream media is to broaden it, to make it more general. Mm-hmm. So it's more approachable from a broader number of people. And my approach has always been the exact opposite, is to make it more technical, serve the niche more in more detail. And it's funny, the shows that do the best on my network are the ones that are the geekiest. Right. The shows that do the worst are the least geeky. And I'm starting to realize that really you can't overserve that niche.
Right.
If people, you know, people will tune, of course, you know, who's going to watch TV on their computer? Not many people. Computer nerds will. So if you super serve that audience and give them material that they're really interested in. So that's really the hard part now. I mean, really, I've got the infrastructure here to do almost anything. The hard part now is going to be to get more and more good content on this thing. But that's the thing I'm most interested in anyway. So we've kind of, you know, the TriCaster, it really gave me the capability of very easily solving all these technical issues in one. A lot of people said, don't get the TriCaster. I got a lot of advice. Mm-hmm. I'm still getting advice. What are you doing with the TriCaster? You know, get a hardware switcher. I priced out a hardware switcher to do what I want, and the least expensive one from somebody like Broadcast Picks. If I got everything I need with the CGs and everything, no virtual sets, just the CGs and the switches, it's going to be $30,000. And it's not going to be as flexible. You know, I still have to get a tape recorder. You know, I still have to get, you know, at least two VTRs. It's just much more complicated. So, you know, we put up with a little bit of growing pains of having this in a PC and, you know, and little issues like that. But boy, given what I can do, the price that I'm doing it, it's just, there's just, every step of the way, it's kind of interesting. Every step of the way, as we've grown the Twit Network, which is the podcast / video network that I do, it's we've grown it because enabling technology has come along. So until there was Skype, I really couldn't do the shows. Until there was Stickam, which is the people who stream the video, until somebody came along and said, yeah, you can do live high quality streaming video for free. Until that came along, it was inconceivable that you could do a live television show on the internet. It was just too costly. Until the TriCaster came along, the technical capabilities weren't there. The light panels, I couldn't have lit this room. It would have been 800 degrees. It would have been a pizza oven if I'd lit it with traditional lights. So all of these, it's very interesting. I just wait for the enabling technology to come along. And then one of the things, I think if I have any, you know, abilities, it's to kind of be on, to see what the new technologies are and be willing and ready to use them the minute they come out. So when podcasting emerged, I was there, you know. And so that's great because I can jump on these new technologies. And every time something like this, like the TriCaster, comes along, it gives me new abilities. And it's like Superman. I get new powers. And it's so much fun to be able to use the cutting edge and to have an audience that is so supportive. You know, I mean, they're right there with me. They say, yeah, let's try that. Okay, great. I'm ready. Let's do that.
This leads me into one of my other questions. I mean, you're obviously somebody who's you've taken advantage of a lot of the new things that have come out on the internet, like blogging, podcasting. Now you're doing, you know, the streaming video, all that kind of stuff. Do you see yourself as somebody that's really kind of helped change media as we really know it? I mean, we've taken it from the analog to the digital stage. Now we've got like products like the TriCaster to give us the tools to take it another step. Do you see yourself as one of those people that's going to be, you know, on the top of the list of who's changed modern media?
That would be pretty cool. I don't know if that's the case. In fact, you know, as I've said, I'm not doing anything that Alex Bennett didn't do at his kitchen table 10 years ago. I feel like though that my new job in life and my new goal is to hack the media. So I do feel like what I'm most interested in at this point is doing. Is seeing how we can take new media and take it to the next level in terms of quality of programming, variety of programming, means of delivery, and most importantly, interactivity, community building. I mean, to me, the biggest difference between old media and new media is it's a two-way street. It's a community of, and the viewer is as involved and as much of a part of it as the hosts are. And so to me, that I think to a lot of old media folks, that's a very challenging concept and something some of them don't even want to do. They're like, oh God, that sounds awful. Yeah. Have to talk to my viewers. Oh, what? No way.
That's never.
So I do think that, I'm very fortunate to be at my age in my 50s, still kind of doing something that's new and current and relevant. I wouldn't call myself necessarily, cutting edge, but I do think, well, I think in the streaming video, we're pretty cutting edge. Tom Green and Chris Perillo and Alex Bennett, there've been a few people ahead of me that I'm copying, that we're all kind of inventing. But I think when people look back, and say 50 years ago, when did it all start to change? I think it's right about now we're seeing this is when it's all. And I would be thrilled if I'm remembered at all for having helped that change.
Well, where do you think things are going to be going in the future? I mean, like 5, 10, 20 years down the line, where do you think you see things going?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think that it's going to be a little bit of a battle because broadband. Oh, I see now why it seemed like it was frozen. I have a 7-minute video that's blank in there.
Oh,
it's playing back right now. So that's what happened. All of a sudden, it seemed like it went away because there was a blank video in there. My fault. You see, TriCaster gets blamed, but it was my fault. So I think what you're going to see is certainly internet distribution of content is going to grow as long as, and we're seeing this battle start to shape up.
Yeah.
Companies like Comcast saying, oh, you can't download more than 250 gigabytes a month. As long as we don't let the internet service providers start to dictate what we can watch, where we can watch, how much we can watch. Remember, internet service providers, particularly Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon, who are the big three, all have business interests in delivering you per premium content like movies or telephone. That's where they want to make their money. And if you start using Skype and undermining that, or you start watching video on the internet and undermining that, they ain't going to like it very much. Yeah. So they're already making noise about how can we shut this down. If they don't succeed, and it really is up to everybody who wants this to happen to fight it. If they don't succeed, I think ultimately the internet's going to mean an amazing variety of programming and content from all over the world available to you any time of the day or night. And that's very exciting. It really is deconstructing the media. It's meaning that it no longer is it big corporations that provide the content. Anybody can make the content. Anybody can do it, put it out, and make it happen. And that I find that very exciting. It's what's happened, it's already happened in blogging. It's happened to some extent in music. It's starting to really break down the music industry. The next industry that's going to start getting broken down is television and radio. And they're the next in the chopping block. And it's just about to happen.
And I've already started updating my resume for radio. So
yeah, I'm speaking in about 2 weeks. I'm speaking at NAB and the National Association of Broadcasters. And I'm going to be talking about, I'm talking to a bunch of program directors and station owners about the coming Holocaust and what they should do. And what I'm going to say is, look, it's not over for you guys any more than it was, over for newspapers when radio came out or over for radio when TV came out. But there is a big threat coming down the pipe at you. And and you've got to really start to realize where your strengths are. And the thing that radio can do that is hard for anybody else to do is it's live and it's local. And I have to say, eventually, these technologies are going to make it possible for you to have a radio station in your house, Rick. And all you have to do is, well, you could do it right now, frankly. Yeah. All you have to do is build an audience. Mm-hmm. And so the key I found with building an audience is it's about building not an audience. That's an old school way of thinking of it. It's a building a community. It's building a bunch of people around you. And I've been very fortunate because I've been building a community for 15 years with thanks to Tech TV and the computer radio shows I've been doing all that time. So those people have kind of followed me along. But it's possible for anybody to do that. It's just it's a question of time and finding a niche that you really serve. I just found out there are over 200 knitting podcasts.
Wow.
There's a big audience for knitting. You find the right niche, and you serve that audience, and you really build a community around yourself. Mm-hmm. You can make it just as good a living doing your own thing. And that's really going to be transformational.
That's one of the things I'm trying to do too. I mean, with
you should, Rick. Absolutely. I mean, I would tell anybody, any young guy like you in radio, to look to that, look to the future. Yeah. And what I'm going to tell these radio station owners is make your personalities blog.
There you go.
Make them participate.
Yes.
With their audience. Some of them aren't going to like it. Those people are going to fall by the wayside. The guys who are comfortable with interacting with their audience have a future.
Yeah. Make it a point to talk to Bill Stakelin from Regent Broadcasting and get that through his head.
Well, really, it's up to you to do it, Rick, because you're building your own audience at this point, right?
I think that's what
I would tell every host. I'm going to be talking to station owners and PDs, but what I would tell the hosts is forget the station owners and PDs. Your job is to build your brand. And so you're going to build the rich brand, and it's going to be something that you carry with you from station to station, from place to place, and the best way to do that is over the internet. So the blog, posting vlogs, video posts. Mm-hmm. There's so many ways to do that now. They're cheap and easy.
Yeah.
And if you have the key now, though, this is the hard, the challenging part, though. You have to have something interesting and new to say. You have to, the audience is there if you have something to give them. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be when I was a young DJ, I would have kind of probably been a little scared by that. It wasn't until I discovered I was into technology, but it wasn't until I discovered that talking about technology was a viable thing to do. No, and by the way, no station wanted to do it.
Really?
It was really hard at first. Because it was, it was too early. Nobody wants to talk about computers on the radio. It's too niche, too narrow. Not broad enough, yeah. So you got to find that niche. You got to find that thing that you really are passionate about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I could do that. I really do think I could do that. And
yeah,
and,
there you go.
Yeah, and Leo,
you're doing it right now. Right? This is your show. This is it.
Yeah, well, it's more Bill's show, but still, I mean, I've got a bunch. I'm just producing it for him. I've got so much other stuff going on, but yeah, I mean, that's.
Well, where is Bill? He hasn't said a word.
I know.
Here.
He's always like this.
I haven't let you get a word in edgewise. I'm sorry.
Let the magic happen. That's fine.
Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, he just basically, hey, you know what he did, Leo? He came to me, he says, Rich, I want to do this podcast about new tech products and the digital lifestyle and all that. Could you help me produce it? I'm thinking, okay, yeah, I will record it. I'll talk here and there, but it'll mostly be Bill. No, it's been my voice that you hear in every single podcast.
Bill's shy.
not always.
No, he's not. When I met him.
Let me interview you, Bill, because you've been around a long time in this business, right?
Yep.
I know your name. Tell me about some of the things you've done.
Well, I started Discrete Effects as a video toaster consulting company. I wanted to help because people didn't know how to use the video toaster. It was on the Amiga
at that
time. Oh, God, 94.
Okay, that's what I mean by a long time in this business. Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah, the Flyer just came out, which is a component that lets you record video to the hard drive. That's all integrated now. That's all built in. But it wasn't built in originally. It was a separate card.
Wow.
And then Dimension Technologies back then had a product called Wipe Studio, which allowed you to make your own toaster effects. So I partnered with VCE. Those guys did some of this stuff in Star Wars. They had a product called a Pyromania, which was fire sequences on CD, and people would use that in like Lightwave 3D or something in their computer animations. I said, wouldn't it be nice if that was a real-time video effect? You had real-time fire video effects. And you see it on TV all the time now, but back then you didn't see fire as an effect. So I used Wipe Studio. I partnered with VCE and created the Amiga Video Toaster version of Pyromania. And that's what got me into the software development side.
You must be blown away by the progress the toaster has made. I mean, you've seen it from the beginning.
It's amazing, yeah. I need to upgrade to TriCaster 2.0, though. Our TriCaster has the old software.
Oh, yeah, 2 is great. I was a little hesitant because, you've got a working production machine, and I'm here, and they send you this USB key, and I'm thinking, oh, boy. I'm gonna be on the air in an hour. Do I really... Oh yeah, what the hell? and you, first of all, it installs very easily, no problems. It changes a few things around, but not enough so that you're at sea. And the ability to stream, for instance, is just huge for me. It's really
awesome.
Fantastic.
The flash streaming, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't have a little basketball on there on your flash drive though, right?
I do. I have, well, I have from a little
New,
basketball.
From NewTek. Would NewTek put anything on there?
No. Let me see what you mean. The on the 2.0, did they put any DVE effects on there?
Well, no, on the actual flash drive. I wonder, did they just send you a standard flash drive or did they put anything on
Yeah, they send you a USB key. They all, you mean like what you put a basketball on your sports one? No, they didn't.
Yeah, I'm trying to differentiate the product line. I have little things for everything now.
I love that. So it's, I guess this is the new way of distributing software. You can't you can't fit it in on a DVD even. So they sent out USB keys.
Yeah. It's a more efficient way of doing it. Yeah.
I think it's a great idea. And now I have and it's kind of nice cuz you have the master on a USB key. It's a great easy thing to store. And I've got a little drawer with all of my discrete effects and the 2.0 on a USB key. It's really cool. I loaded them all, by the way.
What are your favorites?
Oh gosh. Well, I'll tell you what I have right now because I have one whole tab dedicated to them, and I just change them. I love that Flying Fortress. I think that's that one's really fun. For some reason, maybe you can help me. On the military disc, the thumbnails disappeared. Is there a way to get those back?
Yeah, I can send you an update. That happens to some people. I'll send you an
update. Oh, I need to update it? Okay.
Yeah.
Because it's fine. In fact, it's kind of fun because I just load it by, that one. And I don't know what I'm loading at all. And it's really fun. you know, I can't say I have a favorite because I just use them, so many of them. But I do use that B-29 all the time. That one is a real favorite of mine. That one's always loaded. There's a knight that comes through with a big mace. I use that one. Some of the fire effects I love. You do some great ones with the fire effects. So speaking of fire effects, there's some great stuff in there. So, but you know, you sent me the whole set. It's an embarrassment of riches now. I have too many. It's so fun. I pick them at random now. And we actually have, I have to fill time in between shows. And so I'll sit and I have two chat rooms open. I have the StickAm chat room and I have an IRC chat. And people will request transitions or I'll play with them. Oh, I just have so much fun playing with different stuff. Cool. I try to surprise them. So it's really, yeah, it's great. I have a blast with it. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, let advertisers know we can add ads to those effects if they would want something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. In fact, I will come to you for that because a number of the – so you can do that as a transition, but you could also do it as a CG kind of, right?
Right, right.
So I can have an alpha channel that's me, but there's an effect going on around me.
Correct. Or we can actually manually add ads to individual effects or make ads into effects as well.
I'd like to do that. Yeah, because we're looking at now is adding ads to the shows, to the video. We haven't done that yet. And the problem is that the way we do ads on the audio is kind of the old Arthur Godfrey style, me talking about it. But I would like to add some, for the video, I'd like to add some visual sizzle, and that would be a perfect way, while I'm talking about it, you know, to fly in a Visa card or we have some static lower thirds that I have a list of a viewer who just makes stuff for me, and he's made a bunch of static lower thirds for Brain Tonic and Visa and Audible and stuff. But it would be fun to have some motion effects. That'd be really cool.
Try Brain Tonic. I've been thinking about trying that since you mentioned it.
Yeah, I saw the ad for it last night on the feed there. So
that's done very well for us, I have to say. It's kind of a it wasn't an advertiser. It was just a guy who came along who wanted to advertise. I said, well, just send me some. And, you know, I'm not going to advertise it until I try it. Mm-hmm. And then before he even said, let's advertise, I started drinking it on the air. And I just got an email from them about a couple of weeks ago saying, your affiliate, because I don't normally do affiliate stuff, but that's how we're doing it because it's a small company. They said, your affiliate check's going to be late because we've been selling so much we've had to put in a whole new computer system to keep track of this. So... apparently, it's done very well. So next time, I'm going to charge these guys. You know, normally we do the way we do. People always want to do ads where they say, "Well, we'll just pay you when we sell something," and I never do that because that's not a good way to do ads. It's they call it cost per acquisition, and it doesn't pay you for all the goodwill that you build up. But right. These guys were small, and we'd never done it. It was a test of product placement. I want to say, well, can I, you know. use something or drink something on a regular basis on the show. Well, can that work as a way to get people to buy it? And it apparently does.
Leo Laporte, advertising powerhouse.
It's kind of amazing. Well, you don't want to jam the shows full of ads.
Yeah.
So if product placement works, that's very good news. Because it means that you can say, well, here I am, using my, whatever iPod or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that could be an ad, in effect without really being obtrusive or annoying. We wouldn't do it probably with technology stuff. I don't want to have any conflict of interest there.
Yeah.
So that's why I like things like Rain Tonic. There's no conflict of interest in that sense. Yeah.
You are the man, Leo. That's all I got to say.
I don't know about that. Not to sound fanboyish. I'm having a blast. As I said, hacking the media.
Yeah. Well, you are such an integral part of the media. I mean, you've got Twit. You're still doing the tech guy, right?
I still do the radio show. That's kind of my my last mainstream media thing. Although I don't want to ever drop it because my first love was radio, and
yeah,
it's really fun. And I always wanted a national show, and it's doing very well. It's sold out, and the stations. It takes a while now. You know, it's funny. I found out that. Radio's changed a little bit since I was a DJ, which is that most radio stations now sell their weekend time, and it's very lucrative for them.
Yeah.
So most of the shows that you hear on weekend radio are brokered shows. Somebody comes and says, hey, I'll pay you $10,000 an hour to let me run my vitamin ads.
Yes.
And so that's what you hear on weekend radio, and I think that's really too bad. That's another thing I'm going to tell the folks at NAB is, look, you got to have real people. Yeah. You can't be brokering your time. But that makes it hard to get a syndicated show, weekend show on.
Well,
so we're slowly penetrating. We're only about 56 stations. We're slowly converting these guys because they do make more money when they use a real show. Right. Well, they get more audience and they can sell more ads.
Well, people can tell when it's a fake show.
Yeah.
They don't care because it's the weekends. It's like a throwaway.
Yeah,
basically. The stations are literally throwing away their time. They're saying, we need the money.
Yeah. And
they know better.
I'm pushing for you in Utica. I'm trying to get Kim Komando off the air so I can get you on WIBX in Utica. So
yeah, we should be on every station that Kim Komando's on. There's no reason why anybody should be running Kim Komando.
Yeah.
She's been around a long time. She's on a lot of stations, although we are slowly beating her out on most stations, but it just takes a while.
Yeah. I've listened to her show. I mean, she's on here in Albany. She's on WGY, and I've listened to her a couple times, and I I've listened to your show streaming. It's just I mean, it's not because, it is sort of fanboyish, but still, I mean,
you're a fanboy.
I know I am. I still think you're a much better presenter. I mean, from a professional standpoint, speaking as a professional broadcaster, I just enjoy your presentation much more than hers. It's nothing personal. It's just, that's just the way I am. I mean, maybe it's like the whole thing with having a female voice in the morning. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that in radio too.
Right. I don't know what it is. I think more than anything, I try to make my show content rich and accurate as I can, and not to fall for sensationalizing stuff or dumbing stuff down, which is very tempting, and I'm sure program directors listen to the show a lot of times and say, why am I doing foreign language programming on my my channel, on my station? I don't understand a word Leo is saying. But I think what they quickly realize is that we're in a new age, and while you may not understand it, people do, and they want to know this information, and they want to understand technology. And so it's doing very well. I mean, Premier is the number one syndicator in the country, and they're very happy with it. They're calling it a home run. So as long as they're happy, I guess I'm happy. And the only drawback is because it's of all the stuff I do on the stream, it's the only one I can't they actually didn't want me to stream it at all because they're afraid of me cannibalizing the radio station's streams.
Right.
And of all the stuff I do on the stream, it's the one that I can't broadcast both sides to. So people often say, how come I can't hear the callers? It's, I don't have the right to, I can't.
Yeah.
It's the compromise I made with Premiere. So now it's just like I say, it's a spy cam. You're not listening to the show. It's a spy cam.
Yeah, you can watch me while you can see how a real radio guy does his job.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a spy cam.
That's it.
I'll tell you, the best thing in the world, Rich, is to have your own office, with your own setup, and be able to come in here and it's just nice. It was always my dream when I worked in radio in the sterile cubicles and shared studios that I would someday have my own.
Yeah.
And I am living the dream, I tell you. It's so great.
If you knew how many times I have ripped you off, Leo.
Good. Steal. The one thing, and that's one thing I've been really big about, is I don't own any of this stuff. It's not, you know, I'm not proprietary about it. I'm glad to tell anybody how to do it. I'm glad to tell anybody what my experience has been, say, with a TriCaster, or what microphones to use, or what boards to use. I want everybody. I would love to see every single, guy in radio now, like you, Rich, with your own little station, doing your own thing. I think that's the way it should be. And as we get, you know, this is the scary thing for radio stations, is you don't need a transmitter and a tower anymore.
Yeah,
you just need the internet.
I spent all this money on ham radio equipment to learn electronics end.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that funny? You know, yeah. So you have a first ticket?
I've got a general class license for amateur radio, and I'm working on getting that first class ticket.
That's great. So yeah, I started in radio 30 years ago, and you actually had to get a license to be a DJ.
Yeah, that's
it was a third ticket, but you had to get a license.
I actually still have mine, believe it or not. When I went to broadcasting school, I still have mine stamped from the FCC and everything.
You don't need that anymore, do you?
Don't need it anymore. No, they don't. They don't care. They'll let a monkey with a couple of bananas go in and punch the board around. Yeah. So
you had to know how to read the meters and
whether it was direct or indirect or all
right.
That, you know,
calculate antenna powers.
Yeah,
I never used any of that stuff.
Neither have I. Never had to do it. It's all been done for me. It's all like, we do indirect method, read this meter and this meter, and you're done.
Yeah, so exactly.
There you
go. Still take meter readings in radio?
Yeah, we still take meter readings. Yeah, I have to take one. I have to take it at least once per shift, and I forgot to take them last night.
Uh-oh. Well, yeah, I was always faking them. So the reason you do that, Bill, is because you have to make sure that the transmitter is not over or under power.
Right.
And okay.
That everything's going. Believe it or not, you still have to do that.
Yeah, tower lights too. Yeah.
Check your lights.
Wow.
It's so old fashioned.
Yeah.
I don't know any of that stuff. I had a dream to make NewsTech was a magazine. Issue 1 came out in 2005, and I had a dream for it to also be a show, a podcast. And I couldn't make that happen until I met Rich on Amiga Roundtable. Yeah, he wanted to interview me about the oil change movie. And then I let him know, hey, you know, we could also have another podcast about new tech products. So you got to have it. Takes a team of people.
Podcasting is revolutionizing it at radio. And I was very excited about podcasting when it started in 2005, because I thought, this is going to bring people back to listening.
Yeah.
And it's going to bring back radio. And in some ways it has.
I mean, with music online, with downloading the music, a lot of people get introduced to the new music via the radio. They hear, you know, the new James Blunt song or the new Jordan Sparks or what have you. And they go to iTunes and say, hey, I want to buy that. You know?
Yep. It's very exciting. We're in a wonderful renaissance for media, I think. If you want to get into media now, there's so many options for you, so many ways you can play.
Yeah, don't get into traditional broadcasting. I will say this: it's too damn competitive. You're better off doing the new
it's
media.
Tough.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just do like what I'm doing, like what Leo's doing. Just podcasts, video streaming. That's the way to go. Really,
opinion. And a good way to learn. I mean,
yeah,
you know, the hard thing about getting into broadcasting is you have to learn. You have to work at very, very, very small stations, because you have to learn. You have to be bad in a small venue.
Yeah, always start on overnights. They always get you to start on the overnight shift, and
it's a pain. My first shift was Saturday night, Sunday morning. You know, like midnight to 5 a.m. And I only got about an hour on the air, and then I had to run tapes of church, sermons.
Yeah.
And I remember one night I was really, it's like 3 a.m. and I'm running a tape and I'm so sleepy. So I lie down in the studio, and then I wake up and I hear as the tape is going around. And I think, I don't know how long this has been on. We've been silent. There's nothing on the station because the tape ran out. That's it for our broadcast tonight. Good night. But the thing that really depressed me was there were no calls.
Oh, wow.
Nobody. There was nothing.
What
Nobody
happened?
Even cared.
Yeah.
Nobody was listening.
Nobody cared. Yeah, they're all asleep.
That's when I realized, boy, this sucks. And it only took me 20 more years to figure out an alternative. Boy, this is a bad business.
No,
I love radio. I will always love radio. I'm most comfortable sitting here with headphones on and a microphone in front of me. That's my favorite thing in the world to do.
It gets in your blood. It does.
It does. Radio guys, that's why it's fun to go to radio conferences because we're a dying breed, but boy, we get it.
Yep.
And what's interesting is it's all of a sudden we're not such a dying breed. Maybe there's hope yet. There's this thing called podcasting. There's this thing called the internet. There's this dying. I mean, I'll tell you, people want content. The problem is that what they don't want is just more of the same. They want unique, authentic, passionate content. They want stuff, you know, that you really care about. Yeah. So that's hard for a DJ to find something you really care about. Oh,
yes.
Boy. What's that going to be?
Yeah. Definitely.
And it could be this. Could be TriCaster. Could be, you know, anything.
Yeah.
Could be knitting. Could be anything.
Could be Amiga.
Yeah, it could be Amiga.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
How many Amiga podcasts are there? But there are a dozen.
Maybe, yeah. And I get, let's see, Amiga Roundtable gets about 1,000 downloads per episode, I think.
Isn't that funny? I mean, this machine hasn't been made in years.
Yeah, and we're still going. We are still going. You got and new versions of the operating system are coming out. Variants of the operating system versions are coming out. And it's
hardcore.
That is hardcore. It's extremely hardcore. I'm worried about when the Atari groups start rising up again.
Yeah.
Then there's going to be hell to pay.
Atari show. I was an Atari 400 and 800 fanatic.
Oh, man.
So you're part of the J Minor team. J Minor designed those machines and went on to make the Amiga.
J Minor, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
You're welcome in the family then.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Well, Leo, thanks so much for being on News Tech. We really do appreciate it.
My great pleasure. What fun. And just all the best. You know, I thank you, Bill, for all of those great effects. I am just having a ball.
Yeah, you'll be getting car effects and religious effects very soon.
I don't know if I'll have much use for the religious effects.
Yeah, I was thinking you wouldn't have much use for that. But what the hell?
Yeah, why not?
If somebody has a problem with a computer, I can exorcize it. It'll be really
Buddha's
good.
Buddha's on there. You'll like Buddha. Buddha's
there you go. I got Buddha float through. No, that's good. I like that. All right, there you go. There you go. And the cars are really fun. I love the military stuff. I'll drive a tank through the show, and it just breaks people up. They can tell when I'm bored with my own show, because all of a sudden they start, they start seeing flying golf balls. It's great. It's really great. They sent me a copy of the latest, was it Soft Image? What is it that they...
Soft Image.
Yeah,
they sent me the latest copy of it, but this is beyond me. I'm glad they're guys like you, Bill.
Yeah, 3D software takes it's hard to learn.
It's hard
to use. Yeah,
I would love to be able to design my own effects, but I just can't. It's just too hard. I'll come to you with some advertiser stuff. They would love that.
Yeah, I bet they would. Yeah.
I was wondering if I could have a flying Visa card, like chop a guest's head off.
Yeah, we can make whatever you want. Yeah. The animators that I use are very very talented. The guy that made sports effects, he's in Australia. He did a really great job. He busted his butt on it.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait. Well, I'm loading it up right now.
We've got to
interview
him.
The problem is the TriCaster's never off, so I have to, shut down so I can load the new effects because it's never off. It's always on.
Maybe you should get a second one. I don't know.
I actually was, if it weren't so expensive, I probably would. And maybe that's my kind of dream if we ever do well enough that I can afford a second one, because it'd be really nice to have the redundancy.
Yeah.
Plus, I could set it up in another room. We could have another studio. We could have a Studio A and a Studio B.
That would be cool.
Yeah, the TriCaster Pro is a little cheaper than the Studio.
Yeah, no, I bought the top of the line, but that's because I wanted six cameras.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't need the next one up, the highest one, the broadcast, is SDI, and I don't have these aren't SDI cameras. They're just standard.
Yeah, most people don't need the SDI. Yeah, it's really high end.
Yeah. But I tell you, I don't know, will they ever do a high def TriCaster?
I seen them demonstrate one 2 years ago. It was a little red one, so most definitely they're working on that.
Yeah,
because that's the next TriCaster I buy. Right now Flash doesn't do high def, but that's obviously the future for all broadcasting. So that's the next thing I'll do is upgrade to high def cameras and do high def TriCaster.
Yeah, NewTek's working hard on that. You know, they got a lot of experience. They've been doing this stuff for so many years.
I know, they're amazing. They're amazing. No, it's funny because we do everything 16:9. You know, we do everything widescreen.
Good, good.
And I think people, and it's pretty high quality. I think people think it's high def. They don't know.
Yeah,
they do. Yeah, people tell me it's 16:9 high def all the time. I'm like, no.
Right. No. No. But wait, I told Stick M, I just want my screen to be 16:9. I want it to be one pixel bigger than Tom Green's. So give me one pixel wider and taller than Tom Green. That's all. That's all I ask for. I'm a simple man of simple needs. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Leo. And good luck on your show today. Hope you have a great
Thank
shift.
You.
All right.
All righty. Thanks, Leo. Take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Once again, Leo Laporte there from This Week in Tech. You can find him over at twit.tv. For Bill Panagoulias, I'm Rich Lawrence. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back in your favorite restaurant or kitchen, oil change. There's a killer in your food. Coming soon.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of News Tech. Thanks to Leo Laporte for being on the show. And if you want to check in on Leo, see what he's up to, you can head on over to twit.tv. Also check out his streaming video at live.twit.tv, or you can go to his homepage at leoville.com. Also, thanks to Bill Panagoulias, of course, for helping make the show possible. If you have any comments or questions about the show, you can send them to DiscreetFX at DiscreetFX.com, or stop by their website at DiscreetFX.com, or stop by our website, www.amigaz.org. News Tech is a production of DiscreetFX and AmiZ Studios. For Bill Panagoulias, I'm Rich Lawrence. Thanks for listening.